And Taylor gets a first pitch breaking ball, hits it deep down the line toward the pole, and it's out of here! Out of here! Tyrone Taylor ties the game with a three-run homer!
Wow.
Third home run of the year for Taylor, who had nothing to show for two hard hit balls in his first two at bats. Jumps on the first pitch he sees from Bednar and brings the house down with a three-run game-tying home run.
Oh, wow.
Demme at third, Torrens at first, and Bench chops one. In comes Schumann. He runs into his own man, and the Mets win the ball game. Carson Bench with his second walk-off RBI of the homestand. The Mets come from four runs down to win. They win a game they trailed after eight for the first time in 2 years. A monumental victory for the Mets as they take two out of three from the Yankees and finish a 5-1 homestand.
It's another edition of the Talking Mets podcast here on this Sunday, May the 17th, 2026. Of course, I'm your host, Mike Silva. You can check me out all the time at thetalkingmetspodcast.com. You get me on X at Talking Mets No G, and on your favorite podcasting service, Apple, Spotify, pretty much whatever podcasting service you desire. If you want to interact with me, Mike Silva at talkingmetspodcast.com. No G, Mike Silva at TalkingMetsPodcast.com, and come join me at TheTalkingMetsPodcast.com. Chat for free, premium content, updates on the show. Heck, go over to Apple and give us a 5-star review, or Spotify, wherever you get your favorite podcast. And of course, I want to thank the good folks from the Believe Network for supporting this show. Wow, what a weekend. Probably the best weekend of baseball we've seen here in Queens all year, maybe since opening weekend, maybe since the Ronnie Mauricio walk-off. But the Mets seemingly looking precarious through early Saturday evening, all of a sudden when back-to-back games breaking, and I really think this is important, maybe because it just gets the media off their back a little bit, but breaking the whole ninth inning, come-from-behind streak, the first time that they've trailed after eight innings since game three in Milwaukee 2 years ago that the Mets have come back. They beat the Yankees 2 out of 3. We're going to talk about that. Does this change the trajectory of this club? They're now 6 games under 500. We have some mailbag to discuss. And this is a good day for some extra bonus content, two-part episode. Joining me, former Met in the second hour. I had a conversation with him earlier in the week. We're going to talk in early 90s Mets. I think there's some parallels. There's some lessons to be learned from all that. Ryan Thompson, a young player who knows a little bit about how hard it is to play here in Queens, won a championship with the Yankees. A lot of people don't realize that. He was actually an active member on the postseason roster. He's going to be joining me. We're going to be talking about developing and playing in New York, specifically the Mets, and a whole bunch of other stuff. It's a fun conversation. You don't want to miss it, but let's kick it off here. So the conversation always that comes down is the Subway Series, and is it the same, and is the juice the same? And the answer is a very obvious no, because, and I think this could be a lot different come September, 9/11 anniversary, Yankee Stadium, September, maybe both teams will have, it'll be a big game for both teams. Let's see if the Mets can get themselves back in the race. Let's see what the Yankees' position is going to be in the American League. I can't see them not at least being a wild card, but maybe they're playing for positioning or division. So Yankee Stadium, it might be a little bit different. I understand that Mets fans have been down on the club. They sold their tickets. It looked like it was still a Mets crowd, but not a 70-30 Mets crowd. Maybe a skush more Mets crowd. Maybe slightly above 50%, maybe 60-40. You know, if anybody obviously wants to send me a note who was at the ballpark over the last couple of days, let me know. I know there was also the Long Island Railroad strike. I'm sure that didn't help. There was some empty seats, but still, it looked like you got a solid 40,000. And you know, it's not like it was in the heyday where the place is packed to the gills. It's a playoff atmosphere. Now, with that said, that doesn't diminish the fun that these games bring. I think the generation that grew up with the inaugural Subway Series during the 90s, during the Yankees dynasty, is never going to feel, and I'm one of those guys, is never going to feel like it's the same. And that's not really fair to those who are too young to, or weren't even born, who are listening to this show, perhaps, during that period. Maybe you're 25 years old, you're born in 2000, 2001, 2002, around there, and your earliest Subway Series memories are maybe Luis Castillo dropping a pop-up, maybe it's a walk-off by Lucas Duda, maybe it's the recent years where you start to really, like I did in my, you know, teenage years, you start to develop your baseball chops. I developed my baseball chops with the 90s Mets. Yeah, I was around for the 80s. I got introduced to baseball with that late 80s Mets team just after 86. But the 90s Mets are more where I grew up, really engaged in the sport and learning the sport. And as a young adult, it's a little bit different. You disseminate information a little bit different. So I don't want to be unfair to that generation of fans. It's not the same. But also, you got a different type of sport now. There's not the same characters. You're never going to replicate what you saw in the 90s. Joe Torre, Bobby Valentine, the core Yankee dynasty, George Steinbrenner, the Mets, who were still kind of close to 86 and close to owning the city, trying to see if they could get it back. And really, I saw the Mets own the city. I saw the Mets lose the city. I saw how the Yankees, I knew in 1995, when I watched those wild card games against Seattle, when I saw in 94 how the city, and particularly I was a freshman at St. John's University in 95, when I saw how the campus and the Yankee fans just, and for a guy that had not seen big time baseball in a while as a Mets fan, post worst team money can buy, it was kind of invigorating to see what was going on with that series and Don Mattingly, and I knew the Mets were losing the town. And the Mets were in the midst of, you know, we'll talk about that with Ryan Thompson later, basically kind of finding out who they were. Are they rebuilding? Are they trying to retool? Are they trying to grab back some of the glory of the 80s? You see former Mets from the 86 team, Doc and Darryl, winning a championship with the Yankees. David Cohn winning a championship. It was tough. It was tough. And then there's just the drama of the games and the Mets fighting for, really, not only the city, but trying to win that championship, trying to bring that title back to Queens. And I know Bobby Valentine is going to be inducted into the Mets Hall of Fame in a couple of weeks. And by the way, if you haven't listened to his interview with Sal Licata, if you follow Sal Licata, I know some of you aren't fans of Sal. I've had my issues with Sal, but he's got his own podcast. Go check it out. He did an excellent job, Sal, with Bobby. It was a very interesting interview, some revealing stuff about Ichiro and A-Rod and some of his thoughts about how things went down there in the late 90s, turn of the century. But it's unfair to say that. But with that said, and I talked about this over at the Extra Innings, Beyond the Mic, the Subway Series, regardless of how it is versus the older, the other generation or back in the 90s, whatever you want to say. And I'll put aside the actual World Series, because if these teams meet in the World Series again, all bets are off. It's going to be just like it was, maybe better than it was in 2000. But this is always a good barometer of how a team could play in as close to a playoff atmosphere for as high a stakes as possible for a regular season game as there is. You'll have some more of that. You know, sometimes you have big games during the season, Phillies, Braves, road trip maybe, but not the same as the Subway Series. And take it from someone who's been through a lot of these games, remembers the Matt Franco hit like it was yesterday. I saw somebody post on Twitter, on X, that the biggest Mets walk-off hit for them, it was like a hit over the last couple of years. You know, I can't, it was maybe a Lucas Duda walk-off versus Mariano. And I'm like, there is no way. If you were around, I'll tell you a quick story. 99, I still remember the Matt Franco game. And I remember Matt Franco when that hit. and I was watching that game. I was living in Bensoners, Brooklyn. So, you know, small house attached, you know, block on 18th Avenue. All the houses are attached. It's summer, so the windows are open. People are out in the street. It's not like today. You know, that's an old school Italian neighborhood. And my brother and I, my dad, we just jumped, yes, yes. Like, we were pumped, and there was a close play at the plate there. I think it was Fonzie or Ricky Henderson that – probably was Ricky Henderson that scored first. It was Fonzie that slid, I believe, on the throw from Paul O'Neill. And we just went wild. And some of the – because it was an Italian neighborhood and they were really into the World Cup, some of them thought we were rooting for the women's soccer team. Like, no, we're not rooting for the women's World Cup soccer team. We're rooting for the Mets, which nobody – you know, the old school Italians, they could care less about the Mets. But that's how big this was. And I could understand from a different generation, you have different experiences and whatnot. And look, I know that sometimes there's all that ribbing from the Yankees fans because of their history, because right now they're on a different trajectory. This is your World Series. This is what, you know, you guys who are not going anywhere are going to remember this year. Maybe, or it could be a springboard. I still have a lot of doubts about this club. I think this was a nice week, a nice homestand. 5-1 homestand, you can't complain. I don't think it's a coincidence that both Carson Benj and A.J. Ewing were part of it. I think as you go forward, these two kids, they may not be the kind of slugger that you saw with a Pete Alonso. They may not even be anything more in terms of total offensive contribution than maybe what a vintage Brandon Nimmo was. But the two of them together, if they are who we think they are, I mean, and you got to feel compared to what you saw with Beatty and Alvarez and Vientos when they came up, these guys have come up with a different type of game, different kind of swagger. I mean, A.J. Ewing seems to just feel right at home. I know that people are like, oh, it's a rush. It's Stearns is panicking. Sometimes you don't need AAA. Hey, Michael Conforto jumped from AA to the majors and made a big impact for the 2015 Mets. Now, granted, a year later, they sent him down when he was slumping. So maybe they figured him out after he went through the league a little bit, but he made the jump and he played, got a big hit in the World Series, you know, a couple home runs in the World Series. So nobody was talking about his lack of AAA experience or the Mets being desperate then. It's all a matter of perspective. And I certainly think these two kids are going to be a big part of it. Ewing, to me, and no pun intended, because I know his last name is synonymous with the Knicks, he's like an NBA point guard that stuffs the stat sheet. He's going to get stolen bases, walks, play good defense, work counts. And he made an impact today, and that's after struggling the first couple of games. Struggling against Rondon a little bit. Obviously, Cam Schlittler dominated everybody. I mean, here's a kid that comes out of nowhere. A couple of years ago, is throwing in the minor leagues, getting hit up at Somerset, and now he's dominating like he's Jacob deGrom. And give him credit. And Ewing struggled against him, and here he comes back on this Sunday. And he makes an impact, and he puts down a big bunt that changed the dynamic of the inning, brought the extra infielder in. I mean, you got to give the guy a ton of credit. He's like a point guard that fills up the stat sheet. So maybe he won't lead the league in anything, but he's going to be a great run creator in the mold that I think is a vintage before he became more of a middle-of-the-order hitter and lost some of his run creation. Brandon Nimmo. Remember when Brandon Nimmo in 2017 and then 2022 and maybe that 2 or 3 year span where he was an elite run creator. He was always an elite run creator, and people used to scoff, oh, he's a fourth outfielder. No one's saying that about A.J. Ewing. Now, Carson Benj, he's been through the gauntlet. Guy's got an 800 OPS around there, making contact. I know that he had the snafu in the outfield, dropping the fly ball. I think he is a good outfielder. I know the metrics are not going to be kind to him, especially because he what happened in Colorado, the drop fly ball here against the Yankees. I know he's had a couple of those. Had one earlier in the week against the Tigers. Look, I see some people get on his case. He'll figure it out. He's a big leaguer. He'll figure it out. And you're going to have to be patient here with these kids. This is going to be, and we talked about it a couple of weeks ago, the opportunity from the crisis. The Mets are in a crisis. When you look, now they lost Clay Holmes. I mean, and that's what makes this even more sweet, is that after the Clay Holmes injury, and give that guy credit, he goes out there, throws another inning with a broken leg. I mean, that's toughness and commitment. Holmes goes out there. He's hurt. Now you lost the starter. Not good. And we'll see where the Mets go with that. The Mets pitching is the only reason this team is right now within striking distance or can see 500 and may still give us something this summer. May, I say. Because I think the Holmes injury is going to be out till August. I think September. I still think there's a possibility, depending on how that leg heals. And it looks like it wasn't as bad as we first thought. He might be out the year, but they're saying no. That's the only reason this team is within even striking distance. I mean, the crisis is no Lindor, no Alvarez now, no Polanco, and it doesn't look like that Achilles is going to get any better. Luis Robert Jr.'s got a lumbar sprain. You got 1, 2, 3, 4 of the opening day lineup gone. 2 I don't think we're going to see anytime soon in Robert Jr. and maybe Polanco. Maybe Polanco plays through it, but he's going to be compromised. I don't know how it's going to affect him. Robert Jr. with a lumbar issue, I think he's done. His career might be done. Lindor, we're not going to see for a while. We'll see him again. And then Alvarez, you know, obviously that's going to be some time. We're talking about probably Lindor might be the first one that comes back with the next, let's say, month or so. By the All-Star break, it'll be a different club. Will it be too late? That's a different story. So that's where now you have to sit back and just watch the kids perform. Brett Beatty, 820 OPS in May. Vientos, 15 RBIs in his last 14 games. I still didn't like his approach. You still saw why he drives you nuts with how he approached the ninth inning at bat against Bednar. I still think he's in a complete lineup, in a lengthy lineup. He's a seven hitter. I think he might be a good seven hitter. Tons of credit for how he's playing first base. Here's a guy that I thought a couple of years ago during the OMG summer played an excellent third base. Arm was never his issue. But here at first, his instincts, his ability to throw to second, turn the double play, throw accurately, won the ball game. He's been doing a lot of that. I mean, give him some credit on that. The bat, can it come around? Let me just see real quick while I'm looking at it. What is his May numbers? Because May has been a more normalized, towards the team, 9-5 right now, 10-5 in May. Let's see. So in May, Vientos is... he's got a 778 OPS. He's okay. He's driving in some runs. I don't think Vientos is ever going to be a guy that we saw during the OMG summer. I think he's a guy that's going to get streaky. He's going to have RBIs in bunches. And if he could play okay enough first base, you know, there he is. But should not be protecting Soto in the lineup. But that's what you got. So over the next how many weeks up until the trade deadline, and I think we kind of know what this club is, and the identity has changed a little bit because we weren't anticipating Ewing and Benj both, I think, being in the lineup at this time. I think it's a club that has to look at some of their kids and learn what they got. Can Beatty, Vientos, Benj, Ewing, am I missing somebody here? Ewing and, those four guys, can they all kind of support Soto and Bichette? And then the other part here is, at some point, is the veterans. Taylor came in, gave you what you would expect, you know, came in as a backup, gave you a little bit. I mean, it's been a long time since Taylor, who was not a bad hitter in Milwaukee, contributed. I mean, that's the kind of hitter he was in Milwaukee. MJ Melendez is a guy that I think is a backup. Can he support, you know, them? It's going to come down to this. Can the four kids do, can we see the Beatty that we've seen this month, to a certain degree Vientos that we saw this month, Benj and Ewing continue to evolve into what we think they could be, which is something really special at the top of the order. And then can Bichette and Soto, and particularly Bichette, let's see if he got off the schneid with a ninth inning single, can they be the two veterans that hold this together while they wait for Lindor to join them? Because this is not going to be the same lengthy lineup that you saw just a year ago. Because I don't think Polanco is going to give you a lot this year. I don't know what to expect out of Alvarez. I think Robert Jr. is pretty much done. But, you know, center field was pretty much a vacuum last year. What you're really missing, and I know everybody's going to say, you're missing the power that you got from Nimmo and Alonso. Now, Bichette should be providing some of that. He's not. Soto, you figure, with some protection lineup, will. Where are they going to get some of that? Will they get some of that from Vientos? Will they get some of that at some point from Benj and maybe Ewing? I don't see them as power guys. I think the lineup lacks power. I mean, that's it. But what you have to like, because power was one of the things over the years that could come and go, and sometimes environment and it plays into that. They won games by making contact today, by putting the ball in play, by getting on base. I mean, I thought the Marcus Semien hit that tied the game, just going the other way. Perfect. I mean, that's the thing. Semien's there for a glove and to give you something at the bottom of the order. I mean, you can't, you know, everybody's picking on Semien. That's what he's there for. So you've got a team now where you got some, you really got to hold this together. It's critical that Soto and Bichette perform well. I know that they're going to slump, but they can't have these, like, Bichette's what, 2 for his last 30, whatever it is. You can't have those prorated slumps. I know Soto's going through some health issues. He's not complaining, but it's there. And then you've got the four kids, and then whatever you get from the veterans, you get. Whatever you get from Semien, you get. Whatever you get from Torrens, you get. Whatever you get from Tyrone Taylor and MJ Melendez, you get. Eventually, you figure, will they bring up a Morabito? Is there another veteran bat to replace Austin Slater that they could fit in there? I mean, that's what this team is. And now, with Holmes out, where do they go with the pitching? Does Weininger, does Zach Thornton take the ball? Do they start incorporating another young arm? Are they going to do the whole bulk bullpen game? Does Senga come back? Where do they go with this? Because that's going to be interesting at this point. And they kind of found their... What was interesting is because Holmes was doing such a good job, and you know what McClain could give you, and Peralta and Scott is not chopped liver. You were okay with Peterson playing that bulk guy. You were okay with Brazenbaum being the opener. Now it's like, are you going to do another one of those games with Tobias Myers and some bullpen? And I don't know. I mean, Sean Manaea right now looks like he just doesn't have it. So it will be interesting how they, and I don't think they can do two bulks in the rotation. That's too much strain on the bullpen. It will be interesting how they go about that home spot. But this is what you need. Depth. They've used 8 starters already. And I know that some of that is Myers and Brazenbaum doing openers, but they've used that already. And we're not even halfway through the season. We're just a quarter through the season. So we kind of know what this team's all about. I know that I had said by Memorial Day, which is next week, we would decide whether or not, you know, what this team needs. I think we kind of know what it needs. We'll talk more about that probably next week. Let's just enjoy the moment. But right now, the team needs a lot. The team needs a bat. The team probably could use another arm in the rotation. Maybe that comes from within. Very likely could come from within with the young kids. We'll see. They probably could use some bullpen help. Maybe that's AJ Minter. There is actually some young arms in the minors that I think could become part of the conversation before the year is out. I'm not going to get too deep into that on this show. That might be something we put on extra innings. That might be something we talk about a little bit more at another time. But there is some arms in the minors. I'm not so worried about their pitching. I'm really not. I think finding ways to generate more offense is going to be difficult, especially because the margin of error is so thin. You're going to need Benji and Ewing to evolve and continue to be who they were this weekend. You're going to need Beatty to be an 800 OPS good fielding third baseman. You're going to need Bichette to be Bo Bichette again, and Soto to be Soto, and both of them to have very short slumps. And then, you know, whatever you get from the rest, so be it. That's really where this goes, and that's what this team is all about. And I think that it's a team that we'll see. I'm not ready to say that they can't get back into this thing because the muck here in the National League is truly a muck. But let me be fair. Phillies have really roared back since Mattingly took over as manager. They're over 500. The Braves and the Cubs and the Dodgers and the Padres are the class of the league playing at 600 or better baseball. There's two more playoff spots at hand right now. St. Louis playing 580 baseball. Milwaukee playing 590 baseball. Will Milwaukee come back down? That's a team that won well over 90 games, had the best record in the National League last year. St. Louis, everybody thought was a rebuilding year. Now, they've given up almost as many runs as they scored, so maybe they come back down to earth. But you got the Pirates with their pitching. The Reds are plucky. What about Arizona? So there's a lot of teams in the muck. So it's possible that this Mets team, before the year is out, similar to last year, could be in the low 80s at some point if they continue to play well, be in the muck, and possibly sneak into a playoff series, and they could be dangerous, assuming they have McLean and Peralta and everybody together and everybody comes back healthy, they could be dangerous, but you know, we're a long ways off from there. So the Mets are not going to be waving the white flag. However, I will say this. This is a very likely candidate, this club, to potentially be one of those sellers that stays competitive where they sell, they reload through the farm system, then they incorporate some of their young players. And because of the bar with the third wild card being low, similar to San Francisco, who sold off some players, you know, maybe you're in the race the last week of the year. Still, that I could see that scenario for the Mets very, 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 very likely. So it'll be interesting. But have a good time with this. 10-5 in May, a 600-plus winning percentage. It shows you how being 10, 11 games under, how hard it is to get back. Mets are playing really well so far. You're almost 3 weeks into the month, and you still got a lot of work to do to get to 500. Now, you look at the schedule, and don't sleep on Washington. They got a good young manager, and you know the Mets go to D.C., and wacky things happen. But you got D.C., they go to Miami. It's not like that's a gauntlet. They come back home to play Cincinnati, Miami, before they go out to Seattle, and that's always tough. This next, I would say, 2 weeks, where you're looking at 12-ish type games, you could go, you know, could you go 8-4, continue the 2 out of 3, get yourself to 2 under before you go out to Seattle? Because Seattle will be tough. And then you play the Cardinals at Citi Field after that. San Diego, they go to Seattle and San Diego. That's not going to be you. Then you play the Cardinals at Citi Field and then the Braves. Then it starts getting a little harder. You got the Braves in June. You got to go to Philadelphia, play the Cubs again, Toronto. It's not going to be easy. So this is the chance. If you're really going to get back into this thing, by the time you get out of San Diego, Seattle, you got to be around 500, maybe a game under. Look, the Mets, the OMG Mets didn't make their run till much later in the season. I think it was like mid-June when they started really going. So it's possible. That's not a blueprint you want to replicate. But tons of fun this weekend. Really had a good time with this Subway Series. Hope you did too. Let's take a quick break. When we come back, mailbag. Let's hear what you guys have to say. Going to go to the Spotify comments. Going to go to the chat room. Going to go to the emails. We'll see what else. So we'll be back with more right after this. All right, we're back. So let's start getting to some of the comments from you. And they're coming in fast and furious. So first I'm going to go to Twitter. The Mayor Matt, now he didn't write this comment to me, but it came across my feed and I thought it was interesting. He writes, if Benjamin Ewing can be this generation's Dykstra and Backman, where do we sign? Very high praise. I know everybody thinks of, you know, Lenny with the steroids and everything, but when Dykstra and Backman were at that top of that Mets lineup, and interesting, similar to Benjamin Ewing, who are lefties, while he was susceptible to left-handed pitching, he didn't hit well as switching to right-handed, so that's where Tuffle came in. Lenny never got a chance to really play against lefties until he went to Philadelphia and obviously did well. But I would say Lenny was a high on-base guy, had some pop, good center fielder, run creator in his own right. While he was more of a singles hitter, average hitter, not as good defensively. If these two kids, and I know they're both lefties, so it'd be interesting as the year goes on. Ewing has already worked his way a little bit up in the lineup. What will the front office and Mendoza do? Do they see them as, and I don't know if they'll put Benj 1, Ewing 2. Maybe they break them up with Bichette. And then, look, three of your first four hitters conceivably lefty. Not that it matters with Soto, but it does give the opposition a little bit of an advantage. Vientos could maybe break them up a little bit there, but you're not going to move Soto down. You know, maybe you do Benj, Bichette, Soto, Vientos, Ewing, and I think Ewing is a guy because of his run creation needs to be at the top of the order. I know they got Benj up there, so it will be very, very, very interesting. Now, Evan Roberts was, this is a guy that I'm friendly with, AJ Fiore. He's a Yankees fan, and I go back and forth with him. I like to have fun with him. You probably see me on X with him, always breaking his chops about the Yankees, but he wrote that he and Evan Roberts, And I'm trying to find it here because it's an interesting little, yeah. Evan Roberts and I, because he's friends with Evan AJ, Evan Roberts and I just agreed to a side Yankees-Mets trade, Rondon and Ryan McMahon for Bo Bichette. Now, I know everybody's upset with Bo Bichette. Drops the pop-up, hitting like a pitcher. And Bo Bichette, to me, has probably one of the worst transitions on a big contract to New York as you possibly could have. I know everybody talks about Jason Bay. Yeah, he'd be up there too. Bo Bichette, I think, was a better player than Jason Bay. Bo Bichette is in a different class than Jason Bay. Jason Bay was a good player, but I would say Jason Bay was, you know, a five-hitter, power hitter. Very good player, but I don't think he was playing he wasn't playing a premium position like Bo Bichette, coming off a World Series, things like that. So it is interesting. So the answer to that is no. First of all, Bo Bichette has a full no-trade clause. Maybe he wants to opt out and get out of here. He's never going to get, if his season ends today, he's never going to get, over the next 2 years, $42 million from anybody. He'd get a contract, but he's going to have to take a haircut on that. So I think he's going to opt in. And in a lost season, maybe it benefits the Mets. Maybe he goes back to third base with Lindor and with the kids and whatnot. Maybe the Mets are in a better position next year. I would not do that trade. I know the Mets need pitching. Carlos Rondon, to me, he just doesn't do it for me. I know that he's been among the leaders in wins. He's a guy that, when I see him, he's not a bad pitcher. I mean, his last 2 years, he's won 16 and 18 games with the Yankees. He's won ball games. But is he a guy that you really feel in a big spot that you could count on? He's owed two more years at $27 million. Ryan McMahon, who I always liked, he was versatile in Colorado, hit some home runs, is not translated well outside of Colorado. He's played third base primarily. He used to play second base and the middle infield. He's played a little shortstop. How much does he have left? He's got 1 year left. It's an interesting thought. The Yankees taking a risk that all of a sudden Bichette, and you know this would happen, Bichette will put on the pinstripes and it'll be Bo Bichette, like 40 home run Bo Bichette. He'll all of a sudden be all over the... He'll be back. Not only he'll be back better than ever. Stearns would get killed. And who knows what Rondon is, because he's got those little aches and pains. It's not a horrible deal. I think you got to ride out Bichette. I think he's going to be better. The only season in his career that he's been bad like this, and he's actually not even as bad as this, was 2024 when he had knee issues. Now, the thing about Bichette, is he still hurt? Because there were some rumblings about that. Is he got the New York-itis? Is he just having a down year? Or is he done? Like, if he's done, that's probably tied into an injury. The New York-itis and living up to the contract is a different thing. I don't know. Did they get in his head? Did somebody get in his head with analytics or approach at the plate or video or changing his stance? I don't know. I thought Keith Hernandez on the broadcast today had a great idea. Just go in the batting cage, get on top of the ball, hit line drives, get out of it. Maybe that single in the ninth inning off of Bednar gets him going. But an interesting little discussion, I thought, threw it out there. Tim over in the chat room writes, I was at the game on Friday. Amazing how Yankees fans still can't get over Soto leaving. You think he was a Yankee for 10 years and left. I just think Schlittler was great tonight. Sometimes it's going to happen. I actually thought the energy at City was pretty good. Bichette looked good in the field, but lost at the plate. I mean, that's been the case. And now today, the drop pop-up played into that too. Like, now it's starting to affect him in the field. So that was, I'm glad I was not at any of these games. I had an opportunity to go. I could not make it this weekend. And, unfortunately, I don't know, maybe another time at this point. I haven't been to an actual Subway Series. I think the last Subway Series game in person I went was maybe when Phil Hughes was pitching for the Yankees and the Mets beat them. I think it was either 2010 or 2011, around there, probably 2010. A long, long time ago. So anyway, what do we got here? Let's see. Sam writes on the Subway Series, I want to follow up with your tweet regarding Wenninger's arm action. And if, just so you guys who may not know, on Twitter, on X, I saw a video last week of Wenninger, Jack Wenninger, and I thought he was a little behind, like had a little bit of drag on the arm, playing junior pitching coach. That's all I'm doing. So Sam writes, I actually showed you the video you replied to. My uncle, who is a former Division II pitching coach, and he mentioned that he doesn't believe the arm action is late. Regarding the possibility of calling him up following the Holmes injury, I noticed when a Fangraphs prospect writer suggests he isn't quite ready. The concern is that while his breaking stuff is big league ready, his fastball might get hit hard by major league hitters right now. I think that that's an issue on both Thornton and Weininger, and this is why I would caution fans, and I'll put Jonah Tong. Nobody talks about Jonah Tong anymore because he has one up and one down start. And you know, just because we see video or we see them dominate a AAA lineup or even get bombed, and Ernie Dove has been on this show and talked about it, that doesn't mean they're ready. That doesn't mean they're off. That doesn't mean they're good, they're bad. They could be working on things. Development in this day and age is not a straight line, and it very little has to do with numbers. We have access to numbers. We have access to snippets of video. We don't have access to everything. So all we're doing is speculating and playing junior pitching coach, junior scout, junior executive, which is fine. That's what we can do. But sometimes I think that fans take it as gospel, and that could be dangerous. He writes on Saturday that he was the game on Friday, and as much as he hates to admit it, the Yankee fans were more into it from the jump. The crowd felt like 55-45 in favor of the Mets, despite it being a Mets home game, which is pretty disappointing. The Subway Series definitely didn't seem to have the same juice as in past years. So two guys go to the game on Friday, one had a little bit different perspective than another. Could have been the section they were in. On another note, it's tough to deny how good Schlittler is at this point. He's looking like a better pitcher than McClain. It's also been a treat to watch A.J. Ewing. However, the next wave of prospects needs to start playing better, as it's been a down year for the system overall. Unfortunately, Tong seems to be on track to be the pitching version of Brett Beatty. Think that's a little harsh. Tong could also maybe develop into a reliever. Brett Beatty was up and down. I understand your point, Sam. Let's slow the roll on that. We are 45 games in and Bichette has negative war. It's hard not to think about what would have happened if he had just signed that six-year deal the Phillies were offering. I can't help but feel sad that this already feels like a wasted season, even though it's still early. It's a shame to see them wasting the fans' time like this yet again. So anyway, Sam wrote this before the Mets won a couple of games. Understand about that. Probably played into some of the Yankee presence at Citi Field. And, you know, that does happen at this point. I understand that. Let's see. Jason writes, regarding Clay Holmes, I still believe he will opt out of his contract despite the injury. He's likely to command more on the open market. I always notice how quickly the Edwin Diaz off-the-field issues were moved past. I'm not sure that would have been the case if he was still a Met. On that note, Alonso and Nimmo become somewhat unlikable with their constant media comments regarding the breakup. They don't seem as humble as fans initially thought. To wrap up, I think you're better than insinuating that the Yankees pitcher is cheating. I dislike the Yankees just as much as you do, but making off-base claims like that just gives credence to the idea that we're jealous of them. I also see you're still criticizing the fans. I guess you can't help yourself laugh out loud. All good. Well, so I'll address all that. Clay Holmes, we'll see. I think the Mets should seriously consider extending him. I think he's shown he's evolving. He's 33. I had suggested over on Extra Innings giving him a deal somewhat to what Manaea got and, you know, what Nathan Eovaldi got, you know, $25 million a year for 3 years. You may have to go a fourth option. I think that's his value. I don't think he'll get more than that on the market. I think that that's a fair market value. Do the Mets feel comfortable doing that with a pitcher? I think Stern, especially after you saw Tarik Skubal get have surgery and with Freddie Peralta in his five innings, you know, wanting 6 or 7 years rumored. I think getting, you know, developing pitching, getting very good pitchers, beefing up the bullpen and beefing up the offense is better than putting all your eggs in an ace at the top of the rotation that may or may not work out. I mean, imagine if Bichette had a 6 or 7 year guaranteed deal. Everybody's making a big deal about Bichette and the bad start. He's only got a 3 year deal. He could opt out as soon as he gets good. There's really not a lot of harm in this deal. I mean, he may torture you for 3 years if he's bad, but that's not a big deal. It's not a long-term deal. That's where you get into trouble is the long-term deals. And the Mets try to stay away from that for the most part. Even Manaea's deal is a short-term deal. So if you're wrong, it's not like you're married for life here. Except for Lindor and Soto. You are married for life with those guys. As far as the Nimmo Alonso stuff, the media won't let it go. It's a story that for some reason they have become somewhat obsessed about. I think here at Talking Mets, I mean, we brought up Alonso in the Hall of Fame comment that he made to Stern because I thought it was some fun with numbers. I'm over Nimmo. I'm over Pete. And I like those guys. You guys know I was not going into the offseason wanting them to break up any of the guys, including McNeil. I mean, I was open more to McNeil because I thought maybe he was trending downward and he was not the version of McNeil that I liked, the version that won a batting title. But they've gotten to the point with this rhetoric where you're almost like don't want to hear about them anymore. It's a shame because it's, in the short term, it's tarnishing their legacy a lot. When it's all said and done, these are great Mets. I love Brandon Nimmo. I did not like as much the version the last couple of years. That's more of a home run producer. I thought he could, and it's almost like he got away from the top of the order run creator on base guy to a third or fourth hitter. But great, you know, that's what he evolved into. It's still a very valuable player. It's just not a top 15 run creator in the sport. It's not, but still a very valuable run creator. Now, as far as the accusing Schlittler for cheating, look, I'm having fun on X, and sometimes that's the problem with X. I did a little test. Listen, all I said is this, and the correlation and causation don't always match. Guy's in no man's land as a Yankee prospect a couple of years ago, not that long ago. Not even throwing that hard. Now he's throwing hard. He's got a microscopic ERA. He's like Jacob DeGrom. And nobody could tell me what they did to make this guy good. Now, part of this could be with the automatic strike zone and with the need for umpires now to actually call high strikes, because this now is out there. Like, every pitch could be challenged. And if you're right, you have pretty much unlimited challenges. So that could be an advantage to a guy who throws a high fastball. Maybe the whole strike zone being what it is has now helped a guy like Schlittler. And I haven't done any numbers on this. I was thinking about it. With the strike zone being as it is now, which is to the textbook, maybe it'll hurt offense because now you have to chase high fastballs. It's not like it used to be. I just said, hey, all of a sudden a team that's been in the gray area cheating, a guy that has come out of nowhere, nobody knows how he did it. And I played up to it with the Yankee fan base, which they went nuts. And with the shame of it on social media on X, that got like 100,000 impressions or something like that. And I've done much better work on social media having, I thought, intelligent discussion. And I get very little interaction and very little impression. So that's the algorithm, whatever. They like controversial stuff. I was doing it to play around. I don't think the guy's on steroids. I will say this. And this is for everybody, not just Cam Schlittler. What about other versions of Spider Tack that the umpires can't detect? Now, I'll leave, as far as criticizing the fans, what bothers me about the fans, and I'll say this one last time, is the victimhood. Oh, you know what bothered me this weekend? Why did God make me a Mets fan? Why did my parents make me a Mets fan? Then don't be a Mets fan. Like, really, like, that really drives me, victimhood drives me crazy. And the whole, oh, it was so obvious that Stearns could have done this, the complaining about Stearns all the time. Maybe that will change after this series. You have some good young players. You got some bones here. This is not a hopeless case. I've seen hopeless rosters. And let me tell you, when the Mets went from almost winning game 7 to go to World Series in 06 to 2010-2011 baseball purgatory with Wright and Reyes, those rosters and those farm systems were starting to look rough when Sandy Alderson took over. And they got to the World Series 4 years later, and they were very fortunate, and a lot of that had to do with that pitching. But this is not the same situation. That's all I'll say. As far as Diaz and the cockfighting, here's what I said. I said this on Twitter. I'll say this here. I'm an animal advocate. I'm an animal lover. I talked about my dog. And by the way, I want to thank all of you, especially in the chat, who said some nice things. I put a picture of my dog, Bo, who passed away a couple of weeks ago there, and you were so kind. Thank you so much. That meant a lot. I even told my wife that, who doesn't really like to get involved in any of this part of my life, and it touched her too. So thank you on that. In different cultures, cockfighting is looked at differently. Animals and pets are looked at differently outside of the United States. Right, wrong, or indifferent. I'm not advocating for it. I'm not justifying. I'm not defending Edwin Diaz. How we treat dogs in this country, way different than how a family that I have in Europe treat animals. Now, I think it's changing across the globe, but in some cultures, dogs are considered not very good animals. So the point here is, because it had nothing to do with dogs, it had to do with cockfighting, I think it's abhorrent to have chickens kill each other for sport. And treat an animal like that, a defenseless animal. On the other hand, I eat chicken. I eat beef. So I'm participating in the slaughter of animals for food. So I can't say that I'm not guilty of animal cruelty, if you really want to be honest. I think that's a little bit different. I think there's a food chain and survival, and, you know, some animals are meant to serve a certain purpose. What I have a problem with the whole Edwin Diaz thing is I think that Jason is right. If this was Edwin Diaz, Mets closer, this would be a big story. They are working really hard to bury this baseball. I don't think they know what to do with it. Now, from what I understand, cockfighting now is illegal in Puerto Rico. So that could create some issues. The optic is bad. The animal rights activists will be all over this. I think they'll try to bury it. I think the only reason they even have dabbled in acknowledging it is because of the pressure on social media. It will be interesting in the long term how this works out. But it does bother me. The Mets are treated very differently in the press than anybody else. And I always wonder with the Jared Porter situation, if it wasn't Cohen and the Mets GM, how that would have turned out for another team. I really do. Also, during the time, it was a charged time because of Harvey Weinstein and Me Too, so maybe it wouldn't have mattered. But anyway, it just really bothers me. But I also hope that, you know, Edwin has to realize that this optic is bad, and I hope, forget about culturally, you can learn a little bit that, you know, animals, you know, could be very beautiful species, and yes, we eat them, but outside of that, we should really treat them kindly. I mean, I can't say anything more than that, okay? So that's where I have. What else do I have here? Oh, boy. Okay, let me go to, I think there was something over at the Spotify. Let's see. Spotify can get wild with some of the comments over there, by the way. It's pretty, Mary writes, we don't need Trout or Devers, but I would inquire about Christian Walker. He would be a help behind Soto. So that, thanks, Mary, for that. Christian Walker. So Christian Walker is a name that has come up before. I know Houston may be in a position where they're going to sell. He's having a solid year. He's got 11 home runs, an 863 OPS. He's played gold glove defense in the past. He can provide them some right-handed power. I mean, Vientos playing a good first base. What do you do with Vientos? What kind of contract does he have left? He's got, you know, one more year left at $20 million. Would I consider trading Vientos? I don't know what Houston would want for Walker, maybe salary relief. Would I trade Vientos for Walker? I might do that if you want to win now. I just don't think Vientos is going to consistently produce. I mean, could you do something like Vientos for Christian Walker? Do you have to give up a V? I mean, you have to give up something. I wouldn't give up a prospect. What I was talking about with Trout and Devers, a big bat, that was more to ignite the fan base. What the Mets did to ignite the team, ignite the fan base, was bring up A.J. Ewing, was bringing up those kind of guys. You look at, you know, Walker, he's still hitting the ball hard. His bat speed's solid. You know, it doesn't look like he's over-indexed a little bit. You know, I know he didn't have such a great year last year, his first year in Houston. So it's an interesting idea. It's definitely, I know Yordan Alvarez's name. Now, that would cost you an elite hitter. A lot of people don't realize Yordan Alvarez is right up there with Soto and Judge when you talk about run creation. When we had that whole conversation with the Mets signed Soto, he's right up there. Yeah, he's an elite hitter. And he was traded for a journeyman pitcher by the Dodgers. Nobody talks about that either. Look at who they got. I can't remember off the top of the head. The Mets did that trade, it would be talked about over and over, just like the James Shields and Fernando Tatis. But nobody talks about that one either. I mean, again, it goes back to it really shouldn't you know, burn me, but you know, that's something there. Do we have anything else here? I'm gonna see. What else do we have? That might be it. That might be it for today. Yeah, that might be it. So let's do this. Let's take a break. When we come back, we're gonna wrap up with Ryan Thompson, former Mets outfielder. We're gonna talk about those early 90s Mets. A lot of similarities, and I'll tell you what, the early 90s Mets, after the worst team money can buy, after the demise of the 80s Mets, tried to do a rebuild. They had young players like Ryan Thompson, Jeff Kent, Jeremy Burnett, Generation K, obviously Edgardo Alfonso had an impact, Ray Ordonez, and they pivoted very quickly after the injuries to Generation K and tried to jump back in contention. And what was born of that was what we all love, which is the 97, 98, 99, 2000 Mets. So in the end, it got them pennant. It wasn't a sustainable way of winning, but it got them pennant. But you always wonder, and I have said this, and now they're giving these kids a chance. And how long will they give these kids a chance? Let's see. They've given Beatty, Vientos, even to a certain degree, Mauricio, Alvarez tons of rope to hang themselves here. But the Mets historically, the last time they really went on a youth movement and stuck to the plan was when Frank Cashin took over, when the Wilpons and Doubleday bought the team in 1980. It's a long time ago. They really haven't done any of that. They've had some influence of young players, Wright and Reyes, and then they went out and spent a ton with Omar Minaya, and then a short time while they were waiting for the pitching, but they really didn't do a youth movement there either. They held on to Wright. They let Reyes walk as a free agent. So let's see what Ryan Thompson has to say. A talented guy, part of the trade that brought Jeff Kent here. David Cone went to Toronto, was always looked at as a guy that potentially could be a star, was looked at as a disappointment, a guy that didn't live up to his potential. They wound up giving up on him, traded him to Cleveland, believe it or not. And he went on to have some, success as a part-time player and won a World Series with the Yankees, was on the 2000 Yankees, which a lot of fans don't realize, and was an active player in the World Series. So let's sit back, let's wrap up and have a nice conversation. Part two of this week's show, Ryan Thompson, former Mets outfielder, former big leaguer. He's going to be joining me. We're going to be talking about his career, being a young player in New York, early 90s Mets. I'm sure something else will come up. So we'll be back with Ryan Thompson right after this.